Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success, where we discuss what you need to do to be successful in your business, career, and life. At least we're always trying to help you create some kind of roadmap to sort of make that happen. Imagine you could change the world by changing your lighting. Interesting idea, don't you think? If you looked at a map of the world at night, you will see that the concentration of populations by lights on the map. I mean, it's actually a very interesting view, right? It takes up, you start to look at the map and everything, and you can see where things are in the world just by the light spots in the world. I was thinking about this a little bit, and I was thinking it must take up a lot of energy. Now, energy that's either non-renewable, renewable sources. I wasn't really spending too much time in that thought, but I was thinking about the energy overall. We all know thinking and acting greener is a good thing. The science on global warming appears to be correct. And generally speaking, most intelligent, educated people would accept that our future climate issue is a serious issue, is something to be considered. For that matter, you could probably say it's just a little bit of common sense. Now, let me explain that to you. I grew up in a small town. People around me fished, they hunted, they grew their own food. We had animals. I mean, those kind of things. So why would I bring that up? Well, when you live in that kind of environment, people don't really waste a lot of stuff. We reuse stuff, right? We repurpose. We don't throw things away. So for example, I remember watching a neighbor of ours one time who had a store, and he closed the store down, but then he took the building down and turned it into a cottage. He repurposed the whole lumber, didn't have to go out and buy anything. He reused, he conserved, you know, and it was just not a lot of stuff went to waste. So what does that have to do with lighting and electricity? Well, I'm just trying to make a connection here that maybe we should think about things a little bit. You know, when you flick that light on, what is it really costing you, right? What if you could save yourself a buck by changing the way you light your home, your business, right? What if you could actually help save the planet a little bit by doing the same thing? Doesn't that sound like a good thing? Doesn't that just make common sense? Like, really? Come on now. It's just common sense. So finding a way to either improving what you have, reusing things, making improvements, bringing down your costs, and making a place a little bit better to live in, makes a lot of sense to me. So we're going to sort of chat with that today with an entrepreneur, with a guy into lighting, with a guy who's probably maybe even a serial entrepreneur. I'm about to find out. And this gentleman's name is Marty, and I'm going to let him introduce himself. Marty from Manitoba Lighting, welcome to the show.
Richard, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Everybody always says thank you right up front, but then they have to wait it out a little bit and see how things go.
Yeah, we'll see if I'm thanking you in 20 minutes' time.
You know what, Marty, I have to admit, I didn't actually say we sat down here, we started talking and everything. I didn't ask you your last name, or I didn't state your last name.
So my last name is 80. 80. Sounds like the number.
Yeah, it sounds like the number. You know, that's interesting to say that, because I have a friend of mine with the same last name spelled totally differently than yours, but pronounced the same way. And so I was hesitating in saying that. So Marty 80. So Marty, I always start off with a common question. I like to ask my guests to make a connection with the audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Cool. Thanks for the opportunity. I think first and foremost, I love to learn.
Oh yeah. Okay.
At the end of the day, I'm a lifelong learner.
Okay.
And I think that sort of intense curiosity can be something you love, and it may be more so now, but it's something I used to kind of hate a little bit, in that it forced me to be painfully well-rounded.
Yeah, okay.
And that was something that I didn't necessarily see as a strength when I was not an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
When I was still, which is recent times, I'll let you know. We're going back only a few months now.
So why don't we roll back a little bit? Because if you started to develop an interest in being a lifelong learner, that probably came from somewhere. So tell us a little bit about your roots. Like, where are you from? Where'd you grow up? And those kind of things.
Cool, yeah. I am a Winnipeg boy.
All right.
I spent the first couple years of my life outside of town in a small area called Cloverleaf on a little farm. I did move to the city, between 2 and 3.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah. Mostly born and raised in Winnipeg.
Chances are you actually don't remember that experience too.
Well, you'd be surprised. Yeah.
No. Okay. Yeah. Well, at least your parents didn't say they found you in a cabbage patch or anything along that lines. My parents often tell me that they found me in a pair of shoes. So you can tell what business they were in.
That's right.
Yeah. So basically, you're born in Manitoba and raised here. So what area of Winnipeg did you live in?
I spent most of my time in St. Vitale, although we moved a lot.
Yeah, okay.
And maybe that contributes to the feeling of being painfully well-rounded.
Okay.
You know, we moved 5 or 6 times
in the
as
city
a kid.
Itself,
yeah.
Or just different cities?
Yeah, in the city. And then I moved to, after high school, I moved to Ontario for a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, spent 2 in BC after that, came back for a bit.
Did you do a formal degree at anywhere? Or
I did, yeah.
Where'd you go to school?
I spent my first year at Lakehead University, and I was doing sciences. Originally, medical sciences was the plan, and kind of got a little more into the environmental stuff. And after about 3 years, I went and played, before that, 2 years of volleyball in Victoria, which was fun. Again, studying sciences, but perhaps the volleyball lifestyle became the lead in my life.
Yeah, okay.
But not long after that, I actually dropped out.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wasn't as engaged. And then I think this is where I kind of fell in love with the business world.
So you started, that's sort of when you started, it's interesting you would say that because entrepreneurs are often noted sometimes to be a little bit scattered and a little bit all over the place, right?
Yeah, a lot of it.
Yeah, a little bit. So you seem like the type of guy that's juggling a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I certainly try. I think my mother used to criticize me growing up saying, you can't do it all. And I will die trying to prove her wrong in that regard, although I love her deeply.
at least she's listening to you right now going, oh my gosh, you're still trying to do it, even on the radio.
Yeah, you sleep when you're dead.
Yeah, I guess that's a good time to sleep overall. So I know recently you joined an organization called Manitoba Lighting.
I did.
I was reading up a bit on you online, which sort of tweaked my interest. Tell us a little bit about that organization.
Yeah, well, Manitoba Lighting has been around for about 2 years, founded by a close friend of mine who I've known for about a decade named Justin Headland. And Justin took this thing about as far as he could. As a one man, we're using a lot of contract work.
Okay.
And ended up proving the concept himself. You know, was able to do $1 million in sales in his first year, fulfill, market. This guy wore every hat.
So let's just sort of step back. I mean, that sounds like a true entrepreneur. What does Manitoba Lighting do?
We do commercial and industrial LED upgrades.
Okay, and so what does that mean?
In a few words, we help businesses capitalize on Manitoba Hydro rebates. We work closely with them. We developed a strong relationship with Hydro because we deal with them so much, and we're able to facilitate the whole rebate process for our customers.
Okay, and so what does that really mean for your customers when you can actually facilitate a rebate process?
Well, it's a consultative and collaborative approach. I think what we really offer is the ability to go into a space, not only analyze the existing lighting and what could be there, but also what are the business's needs, right? What do they really want?
Yeah, and then what the impact is of that.
Absolutely.
So this is what we'll do is lighting, and I even opened in a monologue like this, and I know we're going to talk a bit about this, and we're going to talk a bit about entrepreneurship and being a new entrepreneur, and then just making change in your life later on in the program. I'm interested in talking a bit deeper in terms of Manitoba Lighting and some business cases and some ideas and things that you guys have been involved in and some of the work you've done, but we have to take a short break first. So this is Richard Len for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm hanging out with Marty from Manitoba Lighting. Now, just before a break, we're talking a little bit about Marty's background, and we're also talking about, I guess, the lighting industry per se, right? But in particular, LED lightings and doing conversions. So, Marty, one of the things I suggested was maybe we can sort of pull a business case, and maybe you can tell us about some of the work you've been doing and what it's meant to your clientele.
Yeah, for sure. I think first I'd like to talk a little bit about the industry.
Yeah, okay.
And that Manitoba is so nascent. We are really on kind of in the gold rush of LED here. Okay. If you look at some other provinces, which with a much more mature industry, like Ontario or BC, where, you know, you might be 70 to 80% upgraded, right? We figure we're 5 to 10% upgraded here.
Okay,
we have no metrics to support this.
Yeah. So,
but
it's a gut feel?
That's how it feels. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like very entrepreneurial.
That's right. Yeah. The optimism, you need it.
Yeah. So what you're saying to me then is that there's a whole opportunity in the marketplace if in terms of conversion. So before we go into a business case, because that's one of the things I suggested, most organizations are looking to do a couple of things, right? They're looking to decrease their costs, increase their productivity, enhance their revenue, right? Make, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when we're talking about something like lighting, right, the conversion of for lighting, really what are we impacting? We're impacting the bottom line of the organization?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it is the bottom line. And I think the ecological benefits are great.
Yeah.
And some customers love it, and that's going to resonate with them if it's one of their core values. But first and foremost, people want to save money.
Okay.
And I think often by leading with ecological benefits solely, you can sort of polarize this argument and it becomes kind of ideological, and it becomes a debate about the environment and the economy. Whereas what we hope to do is just give businesses and people the opportunity to maybe come to the decision for themselves that the economy and the environment aren't necessarily at odds with one another. And in fact, they go completely hand in hand.
They go completely hand in hand. Yeah, it's interesting you would say that. I was, when I knew you were coming on the show, I started sort of Googling green businesses and different things going in the economy. And there was a very interesting stat I came across that about employment and that, and from based on some of the traditional businesses, green businesses are now starting to outpace traditional businesses in the amount of jobs that they're creating, which I don't expect you to address that.
Yeah.
I just thought it was fascinating to
well,
sort of
I think,
see that. And I'm talking like, I'm not talking like, you know, 2-to-1 type ratio. I'm talking like 5-to-1 and 6-to-1, those kind of things.
I think ironically at the root of that is the economical factors.
Yes.
Now LED in particular and many other green technologies, the cost has come down dramatically. And now, like you say, it's a no-brainer. Like solar is making a lot of sense. LED just makes absolute sense, right?
Yeah.
You're going to see a 70% reduction in your electricity usage by screwing in a light bulb.
Yeah, yeah. No, 70% reduction. So we were talking business case. So maybe we can play with that. So I do a 70% reduction in the use of my electricity for, say, we'll just say one light bulb.
Sure.
Okay? So now I got a larger organization. I change out all the light bulbs. Like, can you give me like an economic case for that? Like what, if I had to spend $100, how much would I save, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah. Typically, larger projects are seeing an ROI of anywhere from 1 to 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
You know, anything in the 2-year range is great. If Manitoba Hydro increases rates as they've proposed they may,
yeah, that's
going
to
change
yeah.
drastically. But I think if you want a specific business case, perhaps we're working right now with Old Dutch Foods, Russell Metals, Pratt's Foods.
Okay, so all known organizations within our within Manitoba and
yeah.
other places too. So what kind of things are you doing with these organizations? Well,
anytime they're warehousing and manufacturing, if they have two shifts, say if their lights are on at least 16 hours a day.
Sure, sure, that's a lot
yeah.
of power, yeah.
They're using sometimes $35,000, $40,000 of electricity every month.
Okay.
And if we can reduce that by 60 to 70%, you know, that's a significant saving, sometimes $20,000, $25,000 monthly.
Of savings. And
absolutely.
Then you just calculate that over basically the 12-month period, and that's a significant dollar amount. So is that the kind of stats that are being shown regularly for making these adjustments?
Yeah. When we go through to work with a customer, we prepare a pretty significant proposal that'll show the cash flows over 10 years, maintenance savings, electricity savings, and ultimately what their cost of waiting is and when they're going to see this project pay itself off.
Yeah. So why do you think, you know, this sounds to me like this is a good challenge, right, to be solving? Because quite frankly, I mean, any business to be successful, we often say, find a problem that somebody wants to have solved and then solve it for them. Like that's like entrepreneurship business 101, right? And then sell it to them, obviously, right? So it sounds to me like you found a particular problem that can be solved that looks like it's being supported by, well, you said Manitoba Hydro.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that all comes with one caveat, though, is that lighting isn't a real pain point.
Okay. Like
anyone with business experience knows that a consumer has to be feeling pain to make a purchase.
Yes, yeah.
And to people, lighting is a commodity, right? They hit the switch, the light goes on.
And they don't think about it.
They don't think about it at all. Yeah. Like, and they don't feel the pain of overpaying
yeah.
often until we put a proposal in front of them
and
they see what they're saving.
Yeah.
And even then, sometimes they're not feeling the pain until they burn out.
Until they burn out. And that's interesting you would say that, too, because I've done a similar discussion with some guests, Marty, in the telecommunication space and the use of telephones in their businesses. And until they actually, you get so used to paying a bill, until you actually start to look at what you're paying for and audit it, you don't really know what you're spending versus what you could be saving on it, right?
There's a lot of inertia.
And there's a lot of inertia. And it's just a lot easier just to continue paying than to make the change. So maybe that's a good spot to sort of chat about just briefly in just a little bit that, you know, what's the pain of making the change, right? No doubt some challenges in that.
Yeah, I think there's also a real agency problem that we see a bit in that sometimes the person paying the bill isn't the person who actually owns the lights, right? At any time there's a tenant, or a renter. So getting to the actual decision maker is important. And frankly, for anyone who is paying their own electricity bill and owns the building, those are the people we've had the most success with, right? Where it's an absolute no-brainer.
No-brainer, yeah. Because it contributes right to their bottom line. We're going to take a short break, Marty, and come back. And I think we'll continue on discussion. I know during the break times, we were talking a little bit about what it takes to actually build a small company and the challenge that you have. So maybe we'll come back and talk a little bit about that. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success. But you knew that already because I think it was just played on the intro, wasn't it? Yes, it was. But sometimes I repeat myself. I digress. I'm hanging out today with Marty, and Marty is actually part of Manitoba Lighting and a few other organizations, too. But during the break, just in our last segment, and of course, I always talk to my guests during the break, and we started talking about little things about business. So, Marty, we were setting up the whole business case, the whole idea of changing lighting, and we were talking specifically, and I thought this was a good lesson learned for all businesses, finding the decision maker, you know, ultimately the person that feels the point of pain for any kind of service that you're offering. So what do you guys do about going around trying to find the decision maker? Because that might be a bit of a challenge at times, don't you?
Yeah, I think generally the larger the organization,
yes,
the easier it is for us to find that decision maker.
The easier it is for you. Well, because a lot of people struggle with that, right?
Totally, because in a large organization, generally the people who are the ultimate decision maker in this are very financially educated. Hmm. And anyone, when you put cost savings in front of someone, right, that's an argument that really resonates with the CFO of a company.
Oh, totally.
Right, CEO of a company.
Yeah.
So anytime we can get right to the top, we definitely have been more successful. Whereas, to talk about that agency issue a little bit, say we're working with a condo, we've worked with a few property management companies where we've done their portfolios. But in those cases, we're dealing with a property manager. But in reality, the decision maker is ultimately the condo board. And for anyone who's worked on volunteer boards, sometimes those can be mildly inefficient and challenging.
Yeah, and you know, and that's interesting we put that. Years ago, I worked with a client of mine who sold drill bits. And it's interesting, it's sort of like almost the opposite issue. And I always like to give out little hints for entrepreneurs. And I know you guys are entrepreneurs. But he would actually always try to go and sell to the decision maker. And he found out the opposite. What he had to do was go to the shop floor, give out samples for the workers to use them, and then the workers would tell the decision maker that this is a good drill bit to buy. So just the totally opposite.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. No matter what product or service you're selling, you know, how do you go about actually getting to that key person? Now, I know with any organization, there's always challenges, right? And some of the common challenges that you've talked about a little bit off the side here when we were just sort of during the break was that of leadership, right? And so maybe we can sort of converse a little bit about that. What are the kind of things that you're experiencing from a leadership perspective within your organization?
Well, we've got a new team, right? We've just put this together in recent months, ultimately, of scaling. Yeah. And again, given the opportunity and the uncertainty in the industry, we've been trying to scale fast.
Okay.
So, right, we went from a team of 1 to 6 in 3 months.
Okay, that's a significant growth.
Fortunately, we had the cash flow to do it.
Yes.
And now, right, I think we've had a lot of success, I think, in getting the right people on board. That's probably our biggest asset at this point, is really taking time to distill our values, you know, advertise them, and sort of try to attract people who share them and who are going to be successful in our environment, which is unstructured, right? Anyone who's been in a rapidly scaling entrepreneurial business knows that there's not a lot of structure. There's a ton of uncertainty, right? You never know what you're going to be doing one day to the next. And that takes a certain type of person.
Yeah, yeah. And I would agree 100%, right? When you're referring to that environment of growth, rapid growth, that scaling side of the equation. If we were to sort of project down the road, I mean, you've added 6 people, you know, just quite recently. Do you have like a sort of a number that you're looking to add within the next 12 months within your organization?
Yeah, we hope to grow 5 or 6x this year.
Five or six times the headcount that you have.
Revenue-wise, yeah. We'd like to scale from 1 to 6 million in the next 12 months.
Okay.
And then kind of reassess as we go.
Reassess. So from a body count perspective, what kind of numbers would that look like?
It looks like a 10 to 11 person team.
Okay.
Is likely the number that's going to be able to do that kind of volume.
Yeah, and so to make sort of things happen. What have been some of the challenges you've had into working with the people that you've brought on board?
Well, again, it comes down to training, right? And I do believe sort of in what Reed Hastings from Netflix advertises, and that he says talent density is so important, right? And that you require less process and procedure if you're bringing on A players.
Yeah.
And that's certainly been our experience, and that these people who we've been able to bring on because of their skill set and their competence, we've been able to use them to help us nail down our policy and procedure.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. I love the term that you just used, talent density. Was it talent density you just used?
Yeah, talent density. Yeah. I think there's a great story from Reed Hastings, again, Netflix. Yeah, he says, it was 2005, Blockbuster put the pressure on them. Yes. Blockbuster essentially undercut them. They were selling the same thing Netflix was, DVDs by mail, charging half as much to try and drive Netflix out.
Yeah.
Netflix had 120 employees at the time. More or less overnight, they had to cut 30%. They went from 120, they laid off 40 people, went down to team 80. Reed, of course, assumes that this is going to be a disaster and the whole thing's going to fall apart and there's no way they'll get the volume of work they need to do done with 80. To his chagrin, productivity went up. Not productivity per person, absolute productivity. They were getting more things done with 80 than they were with 120.
120, yeah, they were over, they had too many people actually.
Yeah, and the lesson learned is that when you remove anyone who isn't a top performer from your team, it comes off as a little cold, but there's a place for everyone, and they give people 4 month severance. So, you know, like, that's a great tool for managers to ensure that the talent density stays dense.
Well, I must admit, you just introduced a term that not too many of my guests have, so talent density, and I have read some of the Netflix stuff. So, and we all know the history of the success of Netflix at this point in time, an absolutely incredible organization that's been part of disruption of a whole industry. So we know, so you're learning from some good sources there. One of the things that I'm just going to observe a little bit, okay? You look like you're a fit guy. You must take care of yourself. So,
well, thank you, Richard.
You're very welcome. And I only bring it up because I've learned, if anything, in business, it's important to sort of take care of yourself. So tell us a little bit about what you do to take care of yourself.
Yeah, well, you certainly try. I think running a business is enough to drive anyone absolutely insane. And if you aren't very intentional about taking time for yourself and for your health, it's going to quickly go one way, and it's not good.
Yeah, I often say to people, at one point in my life, I had the corporate success body, you know.
Yeah, it's that red wine and steak diet.
That red wine and steak diet. And people look at me for a moment, just like you just did, right? It's just like, huh? You know, and then they get it, right? They get it, right? And so then you have to figure out that you got to take care of yourself. So what do you do to take care of yourself? Because scaling a company, rapid changes like that, that takes time, right?
Yeah, I mean, in practice, it may be different than in theory, but I'll give you in the theory.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Yeah, I walk a lot. That's something that I definitely do. I practice. I walk every day. About a year ago, I sold my car, which was a bit of an experiment.
Yeah, that's a big change.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Maybe there's a bit of a BSer in that my girlfriend does own a car, so if I was stranded and I absolutely needed one, I'd be all right.
You have
but I absolutely try not to
it's
use
not
it.
It's not Uber or anything.
Rarely,
girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, and I think that it's sort of challenging a really widely accepted convention that everyone in Winnipeg needs a car. People in the city seem to believe that they need a car.
And mostly in a lot of cities, too.
Yeah. And I just disagree. I think perhaps the single biggest impact you can have on your quality of life is to walk to work. Whether that means relocating home or relocating work, if you can limit the amount of time you spend in the steel box and maximize the time you spend walking, you know. So from that, I think maybe the best benefits that I feel from walking are not only it's kind of meditative, right? I use the opportunity to learn if there's a podcast or a show I want to listen to. You know, I sometimes will make phone calls, and oftentimes I find I'm doing most of my problem solving, you know, while I'm just kind of zoned out on my walk.
So what we're going to do is I want to actually start off with this because I like the idea of the changing thinking and economy, and I think a lot of people are starting to embrace some of the things that you're talking about, but we need to take a short break. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm hanging out. This is Richard here. I'm hanging out with Marty from Manitoba Lighting. Marty, I'm not even using your last name. You're so much fun.
This is good. Yeah, we're on a first-name basis now, Richard.
Yeah, I often say to people, you know, my new best friend. I'm hanging out with my new best friend here, and we're putting down a show, no doubt about it. You know what? I found it really interesting. Last segment, I was sort of, I commented on your fitness level. I don't usually do that with guests. I just want to say, just for the record, but I was more curious.
You always know what to say, Richard.
I know. It just comes to me at the last minute, right? But you surprised me in saying you got rid of your car and you started walking and everything. So my first question on that one is great. I'd like to talk about the fitness thing a little bit more because I understand the importance of any kind of career or any kind of life being healthy. But you do sales and marketing calls. Yeah. Right, you're out there talking to clients and everything. Now, my brain, right, my older brain, I go to, well, hold on, I need a car to be able to go to clients and talk to them about, you know, the product and service I sell. So with that thought in mind, how you go about, you know, getting the clients and that? So what's the change you've had to do there in terms of to accommodate not owning a vehicle?
I think living downtown is huge, okay. And working downtown is huge.
Yeah.
Because you can often meet people centrally, right? So trying to, I guess, ultimately, changing your life, right? Changing your lifestyle in terms of some of those decisions you make that are big ones, but the impact is wide-reaching, right? Now suddenly I do a lot of meetings downtown, a lot of lunch meetings, right? A lot of coffee meetings.
And everything's downtown.
And they're all the walk.
It's interesting you would say that because there's two things come to mind. I know the CEO of New Media Manitoba, and I think they just moved downtown, if I'm correct. And I'm also supposed to have a future guest on the show from True North to talk about some of the downtown projects and living downtown. So now I need to ask, what's it like living in the downtown area?
Well, I live just across the Midtown Bridge, so I'm not right in the thick of it, okay. But I'm a short walk into it.
It
takes me about 30 minutes to walk to work.
Okay.
And it's the best 30 minutes of my day. I get a 30 in the morning, 30 at night.
So basically you can listen to a podcast or a pod book or whatever it would be, and, or just think about the things that you're actually doing in your life. That's an interesting thing to be able to do that, because you're not the first person that's told me that by moving to the downtown area, they're just there and they bump into people on the streets that they have to have meetings with.
Yeah, there's definitely an energy about it, right? And I think if to round out the talk about walking, and then I promise I'll leave it alone so you guys never have to hear about it again.
I'm sort of pushing it a little bit because I'm curious about, I'm really curious about changing the way we do business. Right.
Yeah.
And still being effective. Right. And so that's why I'm pushing a little bit.
It can be done. I think at the end of the day, it's like I did an entrepreneurship degree at UVic.
Okay.
And if there's one thing they did a good job of doing, it was that like there are no rules. You know, it was very Tim Ferrissian, right? Like there are no rules. Like you can create anything you want, and especially in business. Right. The whole beauty of entrepreneurship is the opportunity to create a world that follows the rules that you think the world should. And to fully, you know, grab hold of that opportunity and then live it, right? Live by those values. I think that's it. That's the answer.
That's it, right? As opposed to, I'm going to use the term, the grass is always greener on the other side, or what are the Joneses doing, right? Because there is a mentality out there in business that you have to keep up with the Joneses. You have exactly what your neighbors have or not, you're not successful.
Yeah, I maybe it's just the time in my life where I'm a bit of a contrarian, right? But I just couldn't disagree more with that. You know, clearly the economy is changing rapidly, and those who are agile and are in a position to respond are those who are going to succeed. And if you can't see the change coming, I wish you luck.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's interesting you would say that, because I'm actually going to be doing a show that will be aired probably later on this summer on the gig economy and the changes that's going to have. That's going to be a future show on Set for Success. And I'm looking forward to doing that, because I think I am sort of agreeing with you. So here's the thing about contrarians. I'm an entrepreneur, 100%, right? I'm a contrarian too, right? I've always gone against what everybody says that I should do, and I've been successful at it, you know, so I get that. So as one guy's a bit older.
Yeah, well, that's good to
a bit
hear.
More gray.
I love it.
It sort of worked out. So just saying, people, if you're listening in and stuff, and entrepreneurs, I mean, there's times when as entrepreneurs, this is what I'd like to hope you share, is that, you know, it's a scary thing, right? You step out and then what, you know?
Yeah, the uncertainty is, it can be a lot. The uncertainty of making the leap from employee to entrepreneur was one that I did relatively recently, I'd been in business for a while, but only about 3 months ago did I actually make the leap and go at this full time. And of course, there's a lot of fear around that, you know, like taking half the money you're used to is a big part of it. The irony there, though, is that I think way less about money now than I did then, which is beautiful, right? Like a lot of the stress that I felt about money and constantly, you know, trying to improve my own personal finances somehow has disappeared.
Wow, that's an amazing thing. It's interesting you would say that because some of the more successful CEOs that I associate with, and I'm talking they've built up companies from the scratch, started in the garage, and now they have like a mid-range company that's maybe $15 million or $25 million or whatever. A lot of them sort of make the same statement. They've had many times that they're more focused on other things. Money's an important part, but it was not the driving factor.
Yeah, right? That's great news. I think in my short experience, it's just been the opportunity to live in alignment with my own values, right? And to actually, like, I hate the word passion because everyone throws it around.
It's true, yeah. It's
right,
like disruptions
but there's
overused.
A bit of, yeah, there's a bit of truth to that though. Whereas, like, now that I'm much more interested in building a high performing team, right, and building a great company that people want to come to work.
Yeah.
And the my own personal finances are secondary because I feel if you do everything else, financial success is an outcome.
Yeah, there's actually a company called SAS, S-A-S, and it's a technology company. A little story for you. And the CEO of that company, when the company was actually going through very difficult times, he didn't take a salary. And he actually went and drove a truck at night. And he had a company that had like 100 plus employees. And he didn't tell any of his employees. He went and drove a truck at night to support his family, paid all the money to his employees because they were more important and building the successful company was more important than actually taking money from the company. Just a little story
it's
for you.
It's personal leadership. I love
personal
it.
Personal leadership. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you and talk to you about the organization you're with right now or even your thoughts in terms of, well, leadership and entrepreneurship and that, how would they go about hanging out with you?
Yeah, please don't be shy. What I'd like you to do, though, is reach out on Twitter. It's at Marty80, A-D-E-Y is the last name.
Yeah.
And I say that because I want to force my hand and that Twitter is something I never use, but always feel I should probably use it a little bit,
like,
you know?
Instagram or
absolutely.
Others, right?
But so force my hand, fire me a note on there, and you'll actually finally get me onto the Twitter.
What about Manitoba Lighting? Manitoba Lighting.
For Manitoba Lighting, my email address, best way to get a hold of me, is just Marty, M-A-R-T-Y, at ManitobaLighting, all spelled out, .com.
Yeah. Marty, you know what? You have an incredible energy. I have thoroughly enjoyed the show. Like I do feel like just in the time period we've been here, we've become friends. Like you've really made, even during breaks, I mean, just a blast chatting with you. So I really love the energy, and especially as a new entrepreneur, I want to wish you lots of success. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And my final thought would likely be that honesty is hard, but it makes everything else easier.
Honesty is hard, but it makes everything else easier. What a great point. Marty, thank you very much. And to our listeners, I want to thank you for tuning in today. And don't forget, like if you have a thought or an idea for a guest or comments on the show, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. That's just richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.